welcome to Movie Trailer Reviews. It's Ro and Joy coming to talk about some films that showcased at Sundance 2020 this year. And the first up we have is The Assistant. This got a limited release earlier in February, but we waited to talk about it because, well, this movie makes you have feelings. It's supposed to be following a day in the life of a girl named Jane, who's a recent graduate and an aspiring film producer who's landed her dream job as a junior assistant to a powerful entertainment film producer. And it's written and directed by Kitty Green, who's a documentary filmmaker, ordinarily, right?
I think so. I'm going to take your word for it.
Fine. God help us if we're wrong. Obviously, it kind of surrounds the bigger picture of what happens in an environment where there's suspected sexual assault or harassment. So she said that she had a significant number of real life stories that inspired her, starting from 2017 with the shattering expose that happened in the entertainment industry. You know, Weinstein, Bill Cosby, Brett Ratner, etc., etc. Kevin Spacey should go and jump off a cliff, etc. And so it sparked the question in her mind, what about the other people who were there? What about the people who supported him? Which then always obviously segues into the topic that became surviving R. Kelly. But she decided to create a fictional world and a fictional environment in which to consider some of these themes. Would that be an accurate description of what we watched, Joy?
I would agree with that. And I think, one, this film really does a good job of setting a clean arc in such a short amount of time, because it's not even a full 90 minutes, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah, I think it's under 90. And I do think that it sets up a really clear story, and it has so much emotion in that short amount of time. It's actually, like, very impressive. I'm wondering if a lot of that lends to what we believe to be Kitty Green's documentarian experience. I hope we're not wrong. But, yeah, no, I would agree that that's what we saw.
Yeah, well, for me, when I first heard about The Assistant, I was concerned because choosing someone who works in the office clearly isn't involved in whatever is the drama going on, but ends up being in the know, feels a little disingenuous when you want to talk about people who supported toxic work environments or environments that lead toward sexual assault or harassment or just questions of consent between the men and women who are in that environment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then I found out who she cast, and I was like, oh, well, Julia Garner is a really good actress. I liked her in The Americans. I enjoyed her in Ozark. I'm gonna give it a shot. And just from the moment that it starts, when she gets to work before the sun is coming up and she pulls out some gloves and starts to scrape off and clean off a couch in an office, I was like, what am I watching? What did you think about how they started the story?
Yeah, you know, so I would say out of the less than 90 minutes they do, I would say about 15 of that is just exposition. Like, it's just everyday, mundane, here's what an assistant does, depending in this, like, you know, setup story. Now, some of it, I will say, could have been cut, because it does get a little circular, I would say like 8 minutes in. But I do think it does set the story up well once you get towards the end, because every time she's cleaning something or every time she's in another part of the office, it reveals something that's a little bit like, makes your eyebrow raise, like the syringes in her boss's office, and she gotta like replace the new ones or throw out the old ones and like have hazard bags and things of that nature. You're like, why does a producer have these things? But I do think it helps, like, they do it in a subtle way where it's coloring who this person that she works for is.
Well, everything about this movie is done by implication, which I think is pretty much the only way you can talk about it when you don't have facts. And I know that this is kind of coupled and pulled together from different experiences, particularly considering she made this movie shortly after having completed a documentary about sexual assault on college campuses. So she was already in the mindset. And when she built this workplace, it's not one, we've all worked at places like this, where there are a couple of tasks that you really wish you didn't have to do, whether they have to do with someone else being taken advantage of or exploited. Everybody's had a job that has parts of it that you wish weren't in your job duties. Or everybody's been the low man on the totem pole before, where the other people in the office give you the grunt work of the grunt work. So, you know, running to get everybody's food, having to take phone calls no one else wants to take, taking out the trash, putting things in your boss's office. Then take all of those moments and make it to where she's filling out payroll checks, but they won't tell her the name of the person who goes on the check, and she doesn't have anything to write in the memo book. She's just supposed to leave it for her boss. or like I said, the cleaning of his office and it requires gloves and disinfectant, or like you said, reloading up a drawer full of drugs. Did we ever find out what the hell the drug, what was up with the drug, Joy?
No, I don't think we did. Like, I was now that you mentioned it, like, it's, again, it's passing, and I think very well said, Ro, like, it is all under assumption, but that was the part that really woke me up, because I was just like, what is happening? Why does he have all those syringes in his personal bathroom drawer? And then from there, I think, like, because it is done in all subtlety, based on assumption, not necessarily like concrete evidence, you get it escalates more and more. But it's not in a like volatile way. It's very slow paced how it happens.
Well, yeah, it's like a grind. It's like the grind of going to work. She's a new employee. She's been here, what, 2 months? She's super excited about her job because she's going to learn so much. And then,
yeah.
So the overt story for people who did not get a chance to see it while it was in theaters is Jane is asked to teach her job to a new person who's coming in that's supposed to be assistant directly to the boss. And there's been a couple of times where she's been privy to the other male assistants in the office joking about their boss and his proclivities. So, oh yeah, that girl's been here before. Or, oh, don't worry about her too much. Or it's a lot of wink and a nod. And in between all this, she's still trying to read scripts. She's trying to like coordinate his travel schedule. And then they keep making her talk to this man's wife.
Oh yeah.
Joy.
Yeah.
I didn't even know how to process the phone calls with his wife. But you're right. It's kind of slow. It's easy to miss this stuff, which I think is really her point, because it's really easy to miss something going on. Like, I worked in an office where I sat in a room with 3 other women every single day. And it wasn't until I moved to sit in a different department and got a different perspective on that room that I realized one of the women who sat in the room with me every day was having a whole ass affair with one of the salespeople who sat out front. And they were both married to different people who used to come to the office to go to lunch with them.
You know what is crazy is that, like, you make a very excellent point. Like, I've worked in corporate America my entire life, and you'd be surprised at how much you will miss if you just put your head down and do your job. And or like put your head down and like don't be having your ear to the streets. People be leaving the company and all this other shit be happening. And you'll be like, yo, when did this happen? That happened to me recently where I was talking to somebody and they were like, yeah, so-and-so left the company. I was like, when was this? They're like 2 weeks ago. I was like, how did I miss that?
Yeah, because you were doing your job and minding your business.
Yeah, the minding your business part is super key.
Yeah, and I think that's a part of what the real question in this whole movie is trying to pose. Everyone in this office knew their boss was trash. Possibly rapey trash. But there is always this moment and this implication that there was some kind of reciprocity in the relationship, that it wasn't a messed up power dynamic. And there's a scene in the movie where she goes to human resources with a concern, and the guy in human resources just straight up gaslights her to the point where she starts to think that maybe what's happening is she's just jealous.
That was crazy. Or he was talking to her like, do you want to still have a career here? Yeah. And like, what are your dreams and hopes and aspirations? She's like, I want to be it. And she was like, and he essentially was like, do you think this like meaningless, you know, accusation is actually going to make you successful in this industry?
Yeah.
And then tries to position himself as the hero, as if like, I'm trying to save your career here. Yeah. Yo, it was very inappropriate. That whole conversation. I think what made it even more inappropriate was that like, I absolutely believe without a doubt that is a common conversation that happens.
We've all had moments where you either overheard somebody or you knew there was something that maybe you should go to HR about. And you're like, they're not going to do anything. I'm going to be the one who ends up in a sling. There's no such thing as anonymous. Like last night, Michael Bloomberg made a big deal about how his company has been voted number 2 best places to work. And I'm like, I remember those surveys, and my supervisor stood right behind our entire team while we filled them out. We didn't have a choice but to fill them out. They were not anonymous. We knew exactly what would happen if we had said anything negative in a best place to work survey. I really felt it was interesting that these were the elements that she kind of wanted to push together to ask the question about what do you do when you work somewhere where you think something is going horribly wrong? And there's this code of silence. And it wasn't just a cone of silence. This dude didn't come to work and had other people have to make his apologies. But even though we never saw him once, he was such a presence in this office every single day. And it was really kind of uncomfortable. It was really uncomfortable. And it made me have, it made me think about places where I had worked before. And I was like, there, I worked a place once where they were like, don't work late. If he's the supervisor, don't stay, go home. And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with him that we can't, I have to cut my money off because there's something wrong with him. And more than one person, male and female, said, yeah, don't stay. Don't do overtime if he's the supervisor, go home. And that seemed to be the solution to what everybody knew was a problem in that office. How crazy is that?
Well, probably the wildest part of this film too, is that, you know, once she does go there, like, and has that conversation with HR, and HR essentially gaslights her to, like, not do it. And she goes back to her desk. She gets forced by said manager that she filed the report on, because every, to your point, nothing is anonymous, to write a written apology via email to him while he was on the phone, so that there's documented evidence that she was in the wrong.
Man.
If it ever get caught up, if it ever gets brought up again.
I don't even know what to do with that shit. But this movie kind of made me pay attention more to how women are trained to apologize.
Man, that scene, that is what really, like, the HR scene really messed me up, but, like, that scene super fucked me up.
But did you notice how many times she sent apology emails in the email? And it was really kind of upsetting. I was like, you know what? I've done that. Like, I've had a conversation with someone. The conversation didn't go well. When I got back to my desk, I've sent a follow-up email that's leaned heavily toward the apologetic, even if I wasn't overtly taking responsibility for shit going wrong. Especially when I've been talking to a dude, a guy.
Right. And then on top of that, like, I know for a fact you're not sorry. And I know that Jane was not sorry. No. She knew something was wrong. But to save face, to save her career, she gets essentially verbally threatened to make this apology to the man so that he has evidence of said apology in the event that there is some legal matters in the future.
But I was like, even outside of just there possibly being legal matters in the future, that her two other assistants already knew the song and dance, would get up and help coach her through writing a good apology. And like, you know, even after they set her up, they knew it was going to go wrong. They knew it was going to be a problem. And they set her up. They're like, I'm not doing it this time. Let her do it. She's new. Let her handle it. And that's what it felt like. And then when she came back from HR and they were standing there and they're like, you know, you can come to us about anything. She hadn't even cleared his door before he broke confidentiality to tell on her. And so, you know, it was just very weird. And ironically enough, the head of HR is played by Matthew McFadden. He's a brilliant actor. He's currently also on the HBO series Succession. If you're not watching it, do yourself that favor. But it was the other women who were in this movie. And it's like the one woman, like the woman, the color, who was there, who she, and by the end of the movie, she was like, she was so desensitized to the environment they worked in that she was callous.
Yeah.
And the other white woman who worked in the different department, who basically reconciled herself to what everybody knew was probably happening or about to happen in his office late at night, was, trust me, she'll get more out of it than he will. I could see how you could not like this movie, or this movie could upset you and make you really uncomfortable, but I found it to be really thought-provoking, and it made me kind of question a little bit about how I act or what I'm observing, because it's all about perception. You know, when she was just doing her job and tooling along, a lot of the stuff they said, she just kind of let it roll off her back. They're making a joke, or it was something that happened that she didn't know anything about. But after this one moment where somebody said something that made everything else that she had seen or observed feel and hit different, and it made her pay a different kind of attention, and her perception and what the truth was of where she worked was different. It was just, it was crazy. I like the fact that they didn't really try to resolve it in the end, but that also disturbed me more than anything else.
Yeah. She just goes, eats, you know, she just goes to the deli, calls her parents on, calls her dad for his birthday, and just goes home.
Yeah.
And she's going to do the same thing the next day.
It's like, no, really no way to talk about this movie without talking about some of the details, but I promise we didn't actually spoil the main storyline.
No, at all. It's a very well done, again, it's a tight film, but it's, I think, is very well done. I think it absolutely gets its point across, and I would agree with you, Ro. Like, it had me reflecting when I walked out of there, and I was just like, wow, I've been working in offices my whole life. Like, what things that have I either deliberately or undeliberately, like, ignored, God forbid.
Yeah, or what behaviors have you mirrored that you've seen around you that probably made somebody feel like you weren't someone who they could say something to if they had a problem?
And yeah, that's another one.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing about corporate environments and HR and the relationship between the teams and offices. It's not any different than being on the streets. You don't snitch if you want to stay employed. You don't look like you're a problem unless you want to be treated like you're a problem. And right. They've convinced women anything that has to do with us saying, I'm not comfortable with you talking to me that way. It's not okay for you to put me in that position. I have a right to tell you no, on top of just being a worker. So I really appreciated the assistant. It is doing limited release if you had the opportunity to try to go see it. I think it's absolutely worth seeing. Kitty Green did a really good job. I don't know if someone who didn't have a documentary background would have been able to handle this as deftly as she did. And it's a solid cast. We didn't really tell you everybody who was in the movie, but that's okay. Some of the surprises are fun.
Yeah, so, I would agree.
What did you think about this one overall? You saw it in Utah, yeah?
No, so it premiered at Sundance, but I actually saw an advanced screening. They were doing a pre-screening before Sundance of this film. I would say I saw it at Utah adjacent. Yeah, overall, I really enjoy this film. I still think some of the exposition could have gotten cut in the beginning, but I do think it sets up the story that we've described. I would say overall, I don't know. Like, on one hand, I just think on a technicality level, like, I think it's a 10. But I don't know if I want to give a 10 for a movie like this. I don't know. I can't.
This movie is a solid 7 for me. And part of that has to do with the fact that I felt that there were some opportunities that they could have brought in some other perspectives what were happening at a larger scale at this company that would have really kind of made it more obvious why Jane was stuck the way that she was. And I also don't want to give a 10 to a movie that's about this.
Yeah, that's where I'm like, I think technically for the job it's trying to do, it's a 10. I think overall, I can agree with you on that in terms of things that I improved. The exposition bothered me a bit, like in terms of the mundaneness of it. And I was like, ooh, you know, I'm watching this after work and you know my commute. So I'm just like sitting there like, all right, speed it up. And I would say, so yeah, I would give this like an 8. An 8 I think is appropriate because like I think that is a passing grade, but I think it still has room for opportunity. But I can't give a film like this a 10 ever in life. Like, yeah.
I can't either. And now we're going to segue to talking about something far happier because we don't want to leave y'all on a down note. We also saw a Sundance adjacent movie called Downhill, which is a remake of a Swedish film called Force Majeure. And it's a dark comedy film about a couple and their children who go to a ski resort to kind of spend some family bonding time in the aftermath of the husband's father's death. And they experience an avalanche that is supposed to be a controlled avalanche, but to them spirals a little out of control. And the father in the movie, played by Will Ferrell, snatches his phone up off the table and runs, leaving his children and his wife, played by Juliette Lewis-Dreyfus, to die. So this is a Searchlight movie directed by Nat Faxon and Jim Rash, with a screenplay written by Jesse Armstrong and Faxon and Rash. And again, it stars Juliette Lewis-Dreyfus, Will Ferrell, Zach Woods, Zoe Kao, Miranda Otto, and Christopher Hugh, which you may know from Game of Thrones. He's the one who's in love with Brienne of Tarth. Joy, first, have you seen Force Majeure?
I have not, and okay. I do plan to see it now that I've seen Downhill.
Hulu.
Okay, I'm going to watch. Okay, thank you for telling me that. I will watch it. One, again, I appreciate an under 90-minute film. So off the rip, I'm just going to give it a clap because I... My timing and spirit, I can't handle these 2-hour-plus films no more. Like, if you can give me a tight story in 90 or less, you're cooking with gas. So Thank you for that. No, I think overall, I enjoyed the film. I'm going to be candid. I do not think the chemistry between Julie Louis-Dreyfus and Will Ferrell worked for me. I thought Julie, like, was fantastic. I think she did a wonderful job in the film. I think Will is the person who was a bit miscast for me. And so a lot of those, like, bleak, uncomfortable moments didn't necessarily land as much as I'd like it to. But I think whoever the cinematographer is for this film, bravo, because these beautiful sweeping shots that they have in the snow, it's gorgeous.
It's Danny Cohen.
Oh, okay.
I mean, yeah, it's in the Alps, people. It's in the Alps.
It is. So, like, I mean, obviously, like, he has a lot of help. Like, the environment and the area that they are in is gorgeous, right?
Yeah, and but itself? If you've ever seen The Room or The King's Speech and The Danish Girl, you know that Danny Cohen's got skill.
He does. And they even mention in the film, like, you know, this feels like the area that they are in, one of the characters says it looks like a stock photo. That's exactly what it looks like. It's gorgeous. But wow, these sweeping, like, long shots that he has down the slope and having the skiers go down, literally wonderfully well done. Yeah. It's a bright film. It's bright because the reflection of the light from the snow, but it is overall, considering it is a dark film in its subject matter, it is actually a very bright film that juxtaposes that well.
Which I actually thought was a smart move.
Yeah.
Force Majeure feels a little darker and has a different pace because it has a different color palette. It's a lot more muted. It's a lot muddier, except for when they're outside. In Downhill, they made the really smart move to kind of play into some primary colors. So like that bright orange, that's the word Downhill on the poster, is also kind of the brightness of the movie that they have. But I agree with you completely. I am not a Will Ferrell fan, and I went to see this movie because I was curious how they were planning on updating this. But Julia Louis-Dreyfus and the two kids, they were perfect casting. Now, in the original, it's a son and a daughter. In the remake, it's two sons. And I thought that played a little better because I couldn't stand the kids in Force Majeure. Fuck them kids. A lot. I couldn't stand. Like, they talk back to their parents at one point in time in there. They tell them to just get out their face. And I'm like, I know y'all upset because you might have died, but you're not going to talk to me like that because you could die right.
Yeah, now. No, I will say, again, because I didn't see the Swedish film, but like those kids were overall well-behaved. Like they were rough rousing like normal, like young children do. Yeah. But overall, they weren't irritating at all. No, I will say
they
that.
They were just little boys whose parents had forced them to go on a vacation. I like the fact that one of the first things you see, I think the movies open up the same with them immediately going and getting on the slopes and kind of, you know, trying to take a picture because, you know, you're on vacation, everybody trying to sell you that picture of you. And like you said, the backdrops here look like they're stock photos. And then it segues to them checking into the hotel, which is the funniest check-in ever with that woman trying to be.
Oh, yeah. I don't know who she is, but she was fantastic.
Yeah, she's a great actress. Hold on, I'm gonna look up her name because she's actually why I saw this movie. I'm not gonna lie. She plays Charlotte and it's played by Miranda Otto. You may know her from, you should know her from Lord of the Rings.
Got you.
A Thin Red Line. But yeah, I saw this movie because I think Miranda Otto is a really great actress. She's from Australia and she has a tendency to play roles where she's this offbeat, quirky, not all the way their kind of person, or she plays someone who's super ethereal, like in Lord of the Rings. But and I also saw this movie because I like the ginger from Game of Thrones, and he doesn't have a big part in it, but the part he has is actually really funny. So I agree with you. Once the movie started to lean a little bit more into being serious, or even some of the moments where the humor wasn't supposed to feel so gimmicky, Will Ferrell felt wrong.
Yeah, he did. Like when they were having, like, I think where for me it fell flat was the arguments that they were having, right? Like I think when there were comedic moments to it, I was like, okay, this I'm not upset. But like there was one argument or discussion that they had in like a hallway, and you know, Julie Louis-Dreyfus is a great actress and she was selling it, but look, turning the camera to Will's dumb face, I was just like, it's not working for me.
I mean, a big part of this movie is also about perception and perspective and, you know, acceptance of truth versus, you know, your version. So he was gaslighting his family hardcore. Like,
he was.
He got up and abandoned them at a table in the face of an avalanche.
The phone was what took me out. Look, I was like, sir, what? Look,
when that man got up and they panned to his hand, snatching his phone up off the table, I said out loud in the movie theater, I hope he dies.
I also do think that there is a broader conversation or commentary in terms of like men and grief and how sometimes men and grief use this as an excuse to be assholes.
Yeah.
And he, for that, Will sold it. I will say that. Because that whole time I was like, in no way, shape, or form are you writing this argument. Yeah, you have to know this.
No. He was unbalanced. He was clearly trying to pretend like everything was fine, but he was unraveling over the death of his father. And like, but he kept using that to change the subject or to try to downplay how his children were feeling or how Julia Louis was feeling.
And yeah, he was absolutely emotionally manipulating his father's death so he wouldn't look like the bad guy.
Yeah, which was why it was really great when they were having dinner and Charlotte was like, no, that is crazy. Because she didn't know what else to do in the face of Will Ferrell going, oh, well, you know, it wasn't that bad. And she's like, it was a whole ass avalanche. Oh, well, it was controlled. And then when you find out later when they try to go to report it to the Snow Patrol, which, by the way, if that's how the Snow Patrol is, it's a good thing I don't ski. Because those are not my safety people. They are not here for my life. They are not here to save me. And that large ginger man was just interested in heating up his food and going home. I couldn't. Even in that scene, when you realize that Will Ferrell knew before they got there that he is again withholding information, and I was like, what is happening? I can't.
And not backing up his wife. Like, if you think she's wrong, like, talk to her about it once y'all leave. But don't do it in front of the dudes. Like, you know what I mean? So now she looks crazy.
She looks like a typical bitchy American woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I thought that was also an interesting moment where they talked about how Americans are when they go on vacation. The presumption and the entitlement they have when we're outside of the United States. But I also thought, I think some of the funnier moments were after his work friend and his girlfriend showed up. And by funny, I mean jacked up. Yeah, I don't know how that woman who he was dating, the one who was like, we're living in the now. And so she's what was she, 30? Tops?
Yeah, she said she was 30.
I thought it was a really interesting difference between the perspective of a woman who was clearly over the age of 45, and someone who was barely running into 30. No, it's very black and white. If that happened to me, this would be my reaction. No ifs, no ands, no buts about it. I'm good on this. And so it was really interesting to see the dynamic where she's like, you know, you're entitled to feel like shit. You're entitled to be upset. What he did was wrong. And I feel like some of those moments hit a little different than they do when you get a chance to watch the original. Again, please remember, the original is a Swiss film. There are subtitles. It is worth watching. It is interesting. The original is far more surreal than the remake Downhill. So just keep that in mind when you do go back to watch Force Majeure.
Right. But so the couple was played by Zach Woods, best known from Silicon Valley, from The Office.
That's where I know him from. Okay.
Yep. And then his girlfriend is played by Zoe Chow, who's on the show The Stranger or Strangers.
Oh, I know her from The Comeback on HBO.
Okay, there you go. So Zach Woods was being Zach Woods. So like, I wasn't surprised by his performance because he plays within the same note it's his face. It's just he plays in the same note always. That's not a bad thing though. If you know your pocket, you know your pocket. So like, I'm not mad about it. He has a specific skill set and gets paid for it. So I'm not mad.
He looks like an awkward accountant. And in this movie, he was in fact an awkward accountant.
Awkward accountant.
And it really worked. It worked really well. Like, he's someone who's trying to live outside their comfort zone. There's one point in the movie where he actually says, look, I'm already dating up. I know she's out of my league.
And I also appreciated that again. Like, I appreciated that juxtaposition from both two women and two men, that age difference of in their 30s, like early 30s versus in their, you know, late 40s. Yeah. And how for there was a sense of just like black and white for the girlfriend versus, you know, Julie Louise Dreyfus being like, oh, you know, how old are you? And things of that nature, and her being understandably so, and this is not a stereotype, but more like a long suffering wife, like recognizing that like we've spent years together, we got kids. Yeah. Like there needs to be a solution.
It's not as simple as me packing my bag and leaving.
Exactly. Versus it was very interesting to see Zach Woods' character play a more mature role versus the downward man baby spiraling of Will Ferrell's character.
Yeah, Will Ferrell's Pete was kind of like that sweaty dude at the club all the time.
Man, it was rough. Man, like watching it and seeing Zach being like, you need to go home and drink some water. And, you know, he's clearly still riddled with drugs, going to dinner with his family. There was just like a level of neglect. Not even a level. There was just straight up neglect throughout the film. Yeah. That he displayed. Like, there's no, in no scenario, on no version of Earth, are you correct.
Yeah, but what really killed me about it is the movie kind of tried to play some of those moments for laughs, and they were really not hitting at all.
No.
Like, when he was like, yeah, we're gonna do our own thing, and he went out, and then the next thing you know, you could see on his face, after a woman who was attractive said something to him, you could see him contemplating cheating.
Yes.
Like, all over his body language. And I was like, you don't take care of your family on a regular basis. This isn't just about you're having problems grieving. You're trash.
Yeah. And it's like, in the beginning, it was you, like, genuinely grieving. Now it turned into milking it, and now you're just being extremely an asshole.
Yeah, you're just trash. So when you realize the relationship he has with his son is intensely unbalanced, and the reasons why, and then they show you the scenes of where she's like, mom is like, I'm taking a me day, you guys go hang out, here's something that your children will enjoy, you should take them to do this. And the fact that they didn't play around with that on screen, they actually had one of the kids say, you don't even seem like you want to be here. And then what ensues after that, I was just like, I don't like you. I think she should push you off a cliff. I mean, there should be no coming back for you. And so I was a little let down at the end of the movie.
I hated the ending.
Okay, as long as I'm
not alone. I hated the ending because once again, it's women having to deal with the emotional and literal physical toil of being in a relationship with a man who does not deserve it, who is not being considerate, and is being extremely fucking selfish, not only to her, but to her goddamn kids. And they wouldn't be in this problem if that nigga didn't run away with the phone. And then now, towards the end, you are now trying to save face and make him and do the work for him that he needs to do for his
because
children.
Of her sons. Like, the simple fact that she's sitting here and she's like, I can't leave my children. I can't leave. This can't be my children's impression. I can't.
Which I agree with them. I agree with her. But he should be doing that work.
But he hasn't done any of the work, which is why I really hated the ending. Like, the ending felt earned the way they did it. But I was angry that they felt the need to go that way. But I will say this.
I agree.
Juliette Lewis's character, I keep dropping her name. Juliette Lewis Dreyfus's character is a far deviation from the woman in Force Majeure. And when you get a chance to watch that movie, she's going to piss you off. And I understand it's a different time period. I understand that it's a different sensibility. But it's only 2014 when the original movie came out. And the woman who was in there begs. There are moments where she begs.
Nope. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
That doesn't work for me.
So I like the way that they tried to design the meeting of the minds between the parents and the agreement that they make about how they're going to handle this situation going forward as it affects their children. I like that far better than what they did in Downhill, than how certain things played out in Force Majeure. But I do feel like they felt a need to Americanize Downhill for a domestic audience. And I felt that was really a disappointment because it was an opportunity. I mean, I don't feel like we should have to have movies where the woman's like, you ain't shit, I'm out. But it would be nice if when you find yourself dealing with someone who is trash and not a good partner, that you uncouple from that damn partnership on screen. And it doesn't have to be violent. It doesn't have to be toxic. It doesn't have to be traumatic. It's merely you as a grown-ass woman raising two sons realizing that is not the man that you want your sons to grow up to be.
And or it could have been she, you know, the ending happened the way it happened. She gets on, like, she finishes skiing, they go back, she still stays in the room with the kids, they go back home, and the final scene is them back in the U.S. doing what they're doing, and they live in separate homes, or she's, you know, giving him his stuff or something. It don't gotta be dramatic. It don't gotta be.
Yeah, yeah. We are dancing around what actually happens because we don't want to spoil. And I know it may feel like we're not, but we're actually not. The movie ends before they come back to the U.S. And I did like the very, very ending as a nice touch because it, again, like the assistant did, leaves open the implication and understanding that there's still ownership on both sides and that things not going to really be in, like, it's the next day is going to be the next day. But I agree with you. I felt like if they were going to go the route that they did, they should have given us another, they should have fast forward. We should have gotten a snippet. I don't know, 2 months later, something.
Because I hated that scene. Like, when I tell you that except for like maybe one or two scenes, it is completely one-sided to how terrible the husband is. And for good reason, because he keeps doing everything wrong. And I think what frustrates me is throughout the film, she keeps throwing him a bone.
Oh my God. Here. Man, she is doing so much. She's carrying so much of his water. And she keeps opening the door. She keeps trying to bring him to the side of right. And when she finally loses her shit and is done, it is perfect.
Oh my God. Hey, why don't we grab dinner, just you and me? Hey, why don't you take the kids out to, you know, have boys time? At a slope that's kid friendly. Man, hey,
the mess that he did when he had his kids for the day, and how
but that's the thing, all of those ideas, now that I'm talking it out, all of those ideas generated from her.
Yeah,
he had no input in the salvaging of their relationship.
No, the one thing that he wanted to do, they really shouldn't have been doing, because that you don't, he wanted to go on one of those really expensive excursions that you can buy when you do a resort trip. And he was more concerned about the fact that he had spent $2,000 on something, trying to shellack over the fact that he left his family to die.
And also the kids didn't want to do it. I didn't even think it was appropriate for the kids to be there, because they established early on in the film that they were like, why are we, you know, they were like, by the way, there's a kids resort. Like, that's actually appropriate for children.
Yeah.
20 minutes away.
Charlotte called their hotel the Ibiza of the Alps. I was like, oh, so it's just, you just hook, it's like, it's Tinder in person. Really? Why are your children here? But even above that, just the one moment they had where his son is like, I hate skiing.
Yeah. Man, I can understand that. And then on top of that, it's like, not only do you hate skiing, but they've been doing it constantly. They legitimately just at some point want to stay indoors and just be on their phones and like watch TV and stuff like that.
Because there's no joy in their vacation anymore. There's no joy at all. He never apologized for leaving them.
He doesn't.
He basically called them liars. And I was like, I don't understand. So this is another movie that I kind of felt like prompted a bigger conversation afterwards. I enjoyed this movie. It's not my favorite. I can't stand Will Ferrell. I also thought, outside of him not being my cup of tea, I thought he was cast wrong for this.
So and on the opposite of that, so I don't want people to think like this is just like a shit on Will Ferrell review. I actually do like Will Ferrell. I agree that I think he's actually completely miscast here, because even it, and I don't know if that was a deliberate choice, because now when I think about it, I think how Julie Louise Dreyfus' character carries her husband and holds his water. She holds the water in a lot of the emotional scenes in the film too. And so,
but she shouldn't have had to.
And she shouldn't have to. I would agree with you.
That's why I don't understand why. Maybe it's because this movie is unintentionally funny and they wanted it to feel deliberately funny. They wanted a dark comedy.
And like the stuff that I laughed, the stuff that I laughed at was actually like very one note.
Yeah.
And I didn't laugh much because the majority of the time I was irritated with fucking Will Ferrell's character and being like, yo, he is a garbage fucking human being.
Yeah. I was like, none of the moments that I found to be really truly funny were prompted by humor he controlled.
No.
And so I was like, everything else feels false. Now, there were a couple of moments where I felt like there was a certain amount of genuineness to how he behaved, but that kind of felt more like part of why I don't like him. And I don't mean that I don't like him as a person. I don't like, there's a persona he has that he leans into when he acts, that he always seems to bring to every character, whether that character needs it or not. And there were a couple of times when he dropped that face, like when they were in the bathroom, and he was standing in front of a sink looking in the mirror by himself. I was like, you know what? He might be able to do this. And then the next scene, he was back to his shtick. So it's not that I don't appreciate what he chooses to do when he acts. It's not that I don't like Will Ferrell. He makes movies that are not necessarily my bag. They're almost always one note funny to me. And he has this thing that he puts that just doesn't work for me as an actor. It's very disingenuous. I couldn't name a movie where I legitimately bought him in the role from beginning to end, like at all. I can't. I'm looking on IMDb at his list right now and there isn't a single damn movie or role.
So I will agree with you on, and I'll talk about this film in particular. He does have a certain face where I'm just like, yo, this is not appropriate for the scene that you are in. So it is, and I think it doesn't help that also you're acting with an actress like Julie Louis-Dreyfus who has the range, right? Like Julie can do comedy and she can do those like subtly funny moments as she does.
Yeah.
And also she brings a level of gravitas and acting and range.
She's not my favorite, but she's got skills.
She has skills, right, and I agree with you. She's not my favorite either, but I think she did a fantastic job in this film. Like, I think she saves the film in terms of what if it was a comedic actress that was similar to Will Ferrell in his stickiness, this would be a nightmare. But I think she has that because she is funny and she can do comedy. She's been doing it for years, right, in comedic roles, and has become more often than not more known for it. I think she can do it. Yeah. And I think she did a great job.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I was upset in the end with this movie, because I feel like this is the first time that I actually enjoyed Julie Louis-Dreyfus as a character from beginning to end. And I liked her dynamic with everyone in the movie. And there's one scene that we didn't particularly talk about that happened when she had her own personal day. That was
I don't want to spoil it. Like, I deliberately was like, I was trying to hold my, I was literally pursing my lips like, don't say nothing.
No, let's just say that in and of itself, her solo day was worth watching this movie. And I just really wish there had been more chemistry and energy for her to bounce off than in that and the other aspects of the role that she was asked to play. But I think it's worth a seeing. Downhill dropped on Valentine's Day. It would not have been my Valentine's recommendation. I would have recommended that you go see The Photograph, which is, again, another non-standard love story, only that one featuring Black people who are not toxic or trash, which of course means a lot of people didn't like it. This movie demonstrates how very often and frequently people mistake abuse for love, and people mistake covering for someone as being a part of a partnership, and people don't ever actually recognize what it means to be 100% present for your partner and 100% willing to be engaged in a relationship rather than this 50-50 shit people like to put out like they do on something. So
yeah, and on top of that, like I would also add that like this also showcases the level of how apologies aren't enough, or even the fact that people expect you to just, you're supposed to just move on after you didn't even give an apology.
Yeah.
Like his character, he dead ass did not give not a single solitary apology in that whole movie.
He didn't even sorry them.
Right, under the guise of grief. No. Yo, he gotta get the fuck out of here.
Ooh, I can't accept your version of events.
Why do we talk about this film? Like this is now opening up.
I'm sorry.
Here like, wow.
Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, gaslighting has continued into 2020, and I really appreciate that we have movies that we can talk around the stuff that is trash in our lives.
Listen, y'all, it's 2020. Protect your energy and peace.
Both these movies open the door for you to be able to have these conversations in a healthy way, so you can learn these lessons without actually having to have them in your life.
Protect your peace. Like, don't be with a man like Will Ferrell's character. Like, the whole time I was watching it, I was like, I hate you.
But not just that. Don't stay in jobs like the one Jane had.
Yeah, that was the other thing, too. It's like, yo, the depressing, now that you bring it up, for both films, the most depressing parts of it is their end.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, wow, this is going to be a continual cycle of abuse from different perspectives and different stories and different worlds. Mm-hmm. But there is no changing here.
The grind of gaslighting, I'm telling you, it's a bitch. And on that note, I guess we will leave you depressed and sad and wondering why we watched The Assistant or Downhill. Oh, wait. If you had to give Downhill a score, what would you score it? Because we gave The Assistant a 7 and an 8. So where are you for Downhill?
So, like, if we blended our Assistant scores together, that'd be a 7.5. I give this a 6.
Yep, I'm a 6.
I think cinematography, well done, Danny Cohen, shout out to you. I think Julie Louise Dreyfus and the kids do a fantastic job, but Will Ferrell is extremely miscast, and man, as a story, it's fine, but like, in general, ooh, that ending.
Yeah,
that ending.
Had some missed opportunities and a bit of miscasting, so I think a 6 all around is fair. And on that note, we will thank you for joining us again on the movie trailer reviews. The boys left us alone, and you could probably tell why after we talked about these movies. They didn't want to be here for a damn minute trash.
Oh, listen, till the day I die, I will say it. They can be here if they want to. I will say it while they're on the mic. I will say that when they're off the mic. Same. I don't care.
Same. They know. They know. Because, I mean, I'm not kidding. In 2020, you guys really need to take a real hard look at what you consider to be self-care. And if you have the option or the possibility to remove yourself from situations mm-hmm. that are not good for you on any level, but particularly psychologically and emotionally, make the move left. Just leave. Yeah. Get a new job. Find 30 side hustles that let you leave the environment that's grind.
Whatever that is. Whatever you got to do to protect your peace to make you happy, just go. Like, you know, my mom used to say, like, don't stay for a dead thing. If it's dead, just let it die. Like, don't stay for a dead thing. You know what's so funny is that, like, even in talking with this, like, in general, like, I'm in a very good place emotionally. And I know we are building towards that for both of us as well. But, like, yo, even despite the moments of bullshit, I can't complain, man.
Nope.
I cannot complain.
All things could be worse. But these kinds of movies remind you of what should be your goals. And for that, I think they're valuable movies to watch. They're valuable movies to talk about. They're both interesting enough to keep you engaged. But the bigger conversations that they prompt, they're always valuable.
I'd rather you spend the time watching something that'll make you think.
Yeah, than having it in your life and then trying to clean up the mess afterwards. Let's avoid the mess.
Yeah. Hey, man, we're gonna start our dating podcast. This is like our preview for the dating podcast, guys. Stay tuned.
And on that note, we are gonna be out, because Lord help us, we got props.